You are listening to episode 47 of the Tennis Files podcast with special guest Charlie Hoveler.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology with its sleek mid-cut silhouette. It's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Tennis Files Podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Hey guys, I hope you've all been well. I apologize for the, quite a bit of delay since this podcast episode and the last one, but it's because I've been working on a huge project, something that's never been done before in tennis. As some of you may have heard who are on my email list, in a few days I'm hosting the world's first online tennis conference called the Tennis Technique Summit. And basically, it's got over 25 of the world's best tennis coaches, including some legends of the game and fantastic coaches like Johan Kriek, Jeff Salzenstein, Ian Westerman, Alistair McCaw, Dr. Mark Kovacs. There's so many great coaches in this lineup, and it's basically from March 22nd to March 27th, and you'll be able to actually get a free ticket to watch all of the presentations and interviews that I conduct with these amazing people. If you just go to tennistechniquesummit.com or tennisfiles.com/summit, S-U-M-M-I-T, you can check out, all the speakers, all the sessions, and just sign up there and get your free ticket and, upgrade if you want to lifetime access. It's totally up to you and other stuff included. But yeah, it's just something that I've been working on for a long time, for 4 months, before and after work every single day. But it's going to be worth it because it's just an amazing lineup and a lot of just fantastic content. So, but with that being said, I hope you sign up for that if you'd like. But we've got a great episode today with Charlie Hoveler, who is the CEO and founder of US Sports Camps. And it's really a fantastic camp where I think a lot of you know about Nike Tennis Camps. And so they're around the country with some amazing coaches like Billy Pate and Brian Boland. Those are two of the top college tennis coaches in the country. And Charlie and his team, Sierra and everybody over there have done a great job with the camps. And Charlie is actually a really fantastic player as well. He's very accomplished, has won gold balls and championships in USTA match play and tournaments around the world and stuff. So I'm definitely excited to bring you this interview with Charlie from US Sports Camps, and I hope you enjoy. So here we go. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Tennis Files podcast. I have the great honor of having Charlie Hoveler on the Tennis Files podcast today. Charlie is a very accomplished man in the tennis world. He's the founder and CEO of US Sports Camps, which is the largest sport camp organization in the world. Charlie also plays a lot of tennis. He's been ranked number one in the world in singles in the ITF in 1991, 1995, and also number two in 2001 in the 55s, as well as number one in singles in the U.S. twice in 1990 and 2001. Charlie has won a staggering 48 gold balls for U.S. State National Championships in singles, doubles, mixed doubles, and father-son as well, which is really cool. With a string of 24 consecutive years with a gold ball. That's incredible. Between 1990 and 2013. He's also an honorary member of the IC of Great Britain and a member of the USTA Northern California Hall of Fame. It's definitely a mouthful, but Charlie, I just want to really welcome you to the show today, and I appreciate you joining us.
Very, very happy to be here. Honored to be on the show. And because I think something that we all share here, anybody who's involved in the podcast, and is we love the game for a lifetime. So
exactly. I mean, you've shown
lucky.
You've shown that throughout. You've been playing, I think, over at least 50 years now, and that's just such the testament to how great the sport is, and that it is indeed a lifelong sport. And so, you know, obviously you're correct in saying that, you know, whoever's here is really passionate about the game. So going on that theme, Charlie, what do you love the most about tennis?
Two things. I love the competitive nature of the game. It's, you know, you can, assuming you stay healthy and motivated, you literally can have tennis as a competitive outlet for an entire life, you know, from juniors all the way up to super seniors, 90 and over category. So I love that aspect. The other thing, I find tennis is really therapeutic. I don't know how many people think of tennis this way, but when I'm, let's say, taking a break, actually, I never take an unenforced break, but if I'm injured, say, I just miss the thrill of going out and hitting the ball, whether it's drilling, whether it's a match. But I've always found that to be just mentally exciting. It's therapeutic. It really is. That's the only word I can think of. And of course, physically, it's wonderful for your body. It's movement, it's sweat, it's all the things, you know, you should be doing to stay healthy. And you can do it very efficiently. You go out and play, hit balls, work out for 45 minutes or an hour. It's a great workout. And so that's what I would really find the most difficult to give up if I weren't able to play tennis.
That's fantastic stuff, Charlie. 100% agree. And we'll ask you about your secrets for, you know, how you've been able to play for so long. But when you mentioned that tennis is therapeutic, that reminds me of an interview I was listening to on the Tim Ferriss Show with Rainn Wilson, who's Dwight from The Office, as the guest. And he also said that, you know, one of the things that he loves to do the most is to play tennis because that's very therapeutic for him. And I just thought that was really cool mm-hmm. that such a famous guy like that, you know, really attributes tennis to something that can, you know, keep him serene and calm and things like that. But so I heard in an interview, Charlie, that you started playing when you were 12 years old, I believe. Can you talk about your very first memory on the court at that age?
Yeah. In terms of eventually playing college tennis or pro tennis or even good senior tennis, you know, in this day and age, you know, being 12 and starting tennis is sort of ancient, you know. I played all these sports growing up, neighborhood sports, you know, baseball, basketball, soccer, and didn't really get exposed to tennis till I was about 12, and my parents decided to join. We were going to join as a family either a yacht club, can't imagine that, or a tennis club. And I had been to camp and done a little sailing, so I said, "Oh, let's join the yacht club. You know, come on." And they came back one day and they said, "Nope, we're joining the tennis club." And so I went down there the first day and got a racket. There was a assistant pro at the club. This was in the summer. And a really nice, friendly guy who's become my best friend in life. And he was a very good player. And he says, "Hey, you have a little bit of athletic ability here. Let me teach you and coach you and see what you can do in this sport." So that's how it all started. His name is Jimmy Biggs, and he's a lifetime friend. We've played a lot of doubles together. But he sort of took me under his wing, and I started playing tournaments and found out I loved to compete. Still included other sports, which doesn't really happen these days. I mean, people tend to, especially tennis players, tend to get locked in early on in tennis, and they give up everything else, which I think is a big mistake. But, you know, I played soccer and basketball and in high school, et cetera. But that's how I started. And I was very lucky to have run into somebody who cared enough to coach and teach me.
That's fantastic stuff, Charlie. And so, you know, when you were, 12, 13, 14 and starting out, were there any particular professional tennis players that were your idols when you were growing up?
There's one, the Rocket.
Uh-huh.
Rod Laver, he's always been my idol. Actually, he's number two now because in my mid-20s, late 20s, I had a chance to play with Bjorn Borg.
Wow.
When he was only 16, we got matched up in a pro-am event. And I sort of fell in love with Borg and you know, so he's still my favorite of all time. But Rod Laver, actually, whom I just saw in Melbourne, was my idol. He was a lefty. We had the same racket, the Dunlop Maxply, and just loved the way he played.
That's incredible that you in particular, that you play with Bjorn Borg. Fantastic stuff. So, you know, let's talk about your playing career. I mean, you've won, 48 gold balls, which is, a ridiculous amount of gold balls. But tell the audience about your playing career and, what you've achieved.
Pretty good as a junior. I mean, I was ranked number one in New England, although that would never compare to like Florida or Southern Cal. I didn't play a lot of tournaments. I played enough. Went to college, went to Dartmouth, and played a lot there. I loved college tennis, because of the friendships and just having the coaching and the structure. And I still have lifetime friends that I played against in college and, teammates. I actually got to play in one national at Kalamazoo. When I went out there, I lost in the first round. And it was just a statement about, hey, I'm number one in New England. That really doesn't compare to these other sections. This guy was from Texas. So I've always had a little bit of for lack of a better phrase, a little chip on my shoulder because I didn't feel like I could compete with these guys at that age. But after that, just by staying dedicated to the game and staying motivated and staying in shape, and trying to improve technically, I would never be known for the technical expertise, that I have. I mean, it's a funky game. But I think that was a source of motivation to continue to play competitively, to try to play at a national level all the way through the seniors, starting in the 30s and the 35s, 40s, Now I'm in the 70s. And there's a lot of other players like that, guys that I knew in the Ivy League and guys in other, and maybe some smaller schools who were never elite college players or didn't go into the pros, but just dedicated themselves to be a better player relative to their age group, to their peer group, for years and years and years down the road. And that's basically what's happened.
That's great stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's really all about continual improvement. Really the biggest battle is against yourself. So, I mean, just that's very admirable that you've continued to try to compete and get better as opposed to many players who maybe they reach really high level, but then they burn out and quit. So there's a lot to be said for, what you continue to achieve.
You also have to be lucky. You have to be lucky because you can get injuries and you're done. Knees, hips, shoulders, all sorts of things. So it takes a big commitment to condition yourself all the time so that you can survive an injury if it happens, or to prevent injuries. Because the further you get into life and in this game, the more important mobility is. Mobility and conditioning, and that takes a big, you know, day-to-day commitment and motivation.
Right, Charlie. And when you say, you know, it takes a big day-to-day commitment, can you talk about, you know, your day-to-day commitment and what types of things you're doing that you believe have helped you to continue to compete at a high level, you know, going into your 70s?
I think two things. One is you really have to practice hard, not necessarily long, but you have to be, when you practice, you have to treat it like a match. I learned that from the great Tom Brown, who was, you know, the number one player, and I mean, he's a former Wimbledon finalist and doubles champ with Jack Kramer and stuff. I used to play with him, and he was 50 years old. And but when we practice, which is like once a week, it was intense and competitive. And so whether I'm going out and drilling, maybe hitting with a pro or a friend, another player, whether the player is not as good as I or much better, I think you have to walk on that court in a practice session, and you have to hit every ball as well as you possibly can, move to every ball. And so you develop a mentality of intensity and focus that carries over into a match. The other thing is, I think, especially as you get older, maybe in the sort of starting in the 35s, 40s, and getting into the gym to build up your muscle tone around your joints, your shoulders, your knees, hips, etc., you know, with light weights program for strength, and to some degree flexibility. But I think that's important too, and that's really helped me because I have this knee situation, which I've been able to handle. You know, I'm, you know, basically losing cartilage, as we all do. So I think, and the other thing is, you got to keep your weight down. Mm-hmm. Excess weight is an enemy of all tennis players. And that takes work too.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
So,
yeah, no, I agree. Those are all really great points that, you know, everybody can should take to heart and implement those philosophies. And so you talk about the gym building muscles. Can you give us a couple exercises that you do in the gym to help you build muscles around your joints and keep you?
There's a couple things. I pretty much get on the machines. For the quads, for the hamstrings, calves, there's, you know, this mission of weightlifting, for the shoulders. I don't even know how to describe the various stations, but almost every gym has them. And the other thing I found very helpful is the stretch bands. Uh-huh. that you do exercises for arms, shoulders, and core using stretch bands. They're very, very good for tennis players. And, you know, online there's all sorts of exercises you can look up, and you can carry a stretch band anywhere. So if you're traveling, or you can get your workout in.
Yeah, great stuff, Charlie. Yeah, I was looking on Amazon the other day with my buddy Victor, trying to find some good bands for him to purchase for that. So it's a large selection, a lot of fake reviews out there, so that's kind of tough to deal with. But that's great stuff. And so, you know, now let's delve into routines, because obviously you've won a ton, like we mentioned a few times. So what do you have, any morning routines on match day, or any routines before your matches that you implement consistently that you feel have really helped you?
I mean, this is sort of boring. I don't really do anything special. Obviously, I want to get a good sleep, but right. that's one of the real challenges of this sport, is that you need to rest your body and sleep, but your mind is sometimes unable to shut down. I don't know if I should say this on the air, but I'm going to do it. I said one of the things that has made tennis playing, competing nationally, internationally, really nice over the last 15 years or so is Ambien. This is not a paid advertisement, but sure. Literally, I would be unable to sleep at times in tournaments and in front of before a big match. And so now I'll take like a quarter of an Ambien or some sort of sleep aid, and it doesn't really affect you, and it allows you to sleep. But in the morning before a match, I don't excessively warm up. You know, I loosen up. I get on the bike, stationary bike, to get the heart working, and then hit some balls and stay warm, and maybe do a little bit of stretching. I'm not a big stretcher. I'm not saying it's not good. I mean, it just hasn't been necessary for me. And just, have a nice quiet time and sit down and think, clear your mind a little bit, and go out and play. Go out and compete.
Good stuff. I mean, that's pretty much all you really need to do. That's great. I mean, huge thing about getting enough sleep. I think that's the one biggest thing that everybody can do. I forget, who I was listening to on another podcast, but there was some basketball player who just committed himself to sleeping a couple more hours a night, and all of his numbers went up that season. So that's incredible. And also, obviously, a little disclaimer from us, none of us are doctors, so we don't necessarily recommend Ambien to everyone. But, it works. Maybe if it works for you, it works. But yeah, great stuff. And then obviously you do warm up in some fashion. And there's no need to stretch excessively as long as you warm up your muscles before you play. In fact, stretching, static stretching before playing at all is actually bad for you. So you're on the right track there. That's great. And so what's some overall advice to senior players on how they can keep playing, keep competing, and stay motivated?
I think a lot of senior players can do more than they think they can. Of course, you have to be motivated to do the work that it takes to, one, stay healthy, and two, to compete. I think you should always try to, even if you have the same habits and the same grips and the same game, which all of which are hard to change, but technical improvement is something you should work hard to get from a coach that you can relate to, from listening to shows like this. I think technical improvement is very inspiring. Even if you, say, improve your weakest shot, a shot that maybe breaks down in a match, and find what you're doing technically wrong with that and working on to improve it is very important. And the other thing is that you can, I mean, one of the problems is, you know, people get busy and they stop practicing or training. But as busy as you might be, to get in your tennis practice, your workouts on a regular basis, and I'm talking 3 or 4 times a week, even if it's for 15 or 20 minutes that you grab, hop on court. I do some other things. I'm a big believer in working out in the ball machine. And if you can believe it, and this really comes back from the 50s and 60s, the backboard. You know, I think a backboard workout for 15 or 20 minutes is amazingly productive. So you have to make that commitment almost on a daily basis to improving technically and to keeping your strokes in shape and your body in shape too in the gym. You know, if you do tennis every other day, maybe the other time is productive time in the gym, it's probably just as good. So that's what I would say to the senior players. But it all starts from, you know, in your head. You have to be motivated to do it. You have to have a vision of what you want to become as a player, as a competitor, whether it's on a national level, international level, local, club, whatever. I mean, it's fun to improve. I mean, my whole business with our camps is all about improvement and how motivating that is. And it's possible for everybody. Even if you've been playing the game for 40 years, you can improve.
Agreed.
And you'll win more matches. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. Just keep improving. Great stuff. Charlie, this one, you know, this one's a tough one. You know, obviously, you've been playing for a while, but if you could give your 20-year-old self advice on how to play better tennis, what would you tell him?
Oh boy. The way the game has changed, you can't play the game as a 20-year-old, as a junior, the way I play it with my grips. I have continental grips. I hit mostly slice, some flat, never been able to come over the ball. So I would say, make sure you have the right grips that can maximize your potential and not limit your potential. If I had to do over again, I would have had different grips early on. Now, they've worked, okay? And it's actually sort of a fun way to play, but you can't play that way now with, you know, continentals and no topspin. So the good thing is that the more you get into the seniors, the harder it is to hit big topspin shots. They take a lot of effort and they take a lot of mobility. So the type of game that I have now, which I couldn't really be effective if I were 20 now. Now, you know, I'm 70, and all the way through the older senior age groups, it's very effective. It's very efficient. It's easy on the body. It's just, you know, a nice way to play. But when you go up against, you know, younger people with heavier topspin shots, you can't do it. So, and grips are the hardest thing to change in tennis. You can change your serve. You can change your footwork and stuff. Grips are really a nightmare to incorporate. to change and modify so that you get better.
Yeah, no, I agree, Charlie. It's definitely, it feels awkward when you want to change your grip and you try a new one out, then you want to, instinctively change back. That's great advice about the grips. And actually, I asked this question to a lot of my guests, and I've actually never heard this one before. So it's great to hear, a unique one from you. Fantastic. I obviously want to highlight, your wonderful job with U.S. sports camps and Nike tennis camps. So I just want to ask you, how was U.S. sports camps born?
Well, after college, I went to graduate school, got an MBA, went in the investment business, and I decided that I wanted to be in the sports business. So I took a job with a guy who was the owner of a distributorship for Adidas at the time, a company called Klosko is out in my area here in Northern Cal. I go into work the first day and he says, "Hey, I hired you to do sales, marketing, blah, blah, blah." Things were booming. He says, "However, I made an investment in a tennis camp company." This was probably the peak of the tennis boom of the 70s, this 1974. And he said, "The company's really in trouble. I want you to get involved. And you know some of the tennis people here." It turns out it was a company called Tennis America, which was started by Billie Jean King and Dennis Vandermeer. And it was sort of a mess, for a lot of reasons. Anyway, the guy says, "Hey, what should we do here?" I said, "What a great concept to have kids and adults at that time going to camp during the summer." Let's talk about kids, because the first thing we did was we sort of eliminated the adults and focused on the kids, to get away, to go to camp, to learn from a pro, typically a college coach, on a college campus. I said, "This could be a great business, scalable and all that." So we started. I did it part-time. And we tried to manage it properly, proper amount of risk, and not do stupid things like take on a lot of debt and things. And we grew it slowly. And it worked. It's a wonderful business, and it does wonderful things. I mean, you watch these kids going to camp. Now it's, 16 different sports, and it's a total of 700 camps. But just starting those camps and seeing what a great opportunity it was for kids to improve in their sport, and they want to improve. It's just when you do it at camp, when you go to camp, you're on the court 5 hours a day, and it's 6 days a week. The opportunities for improvement and new inspiration are great. So anyway, that was the concept. And we made it work. I eventually did it full-time, 10 years down the road, and it's grown into a decent size business, but basically the same model. And we just have great coaches who are involved. We do their business for them. They run the camps. They hire their staff. They really produce, the experience for the kids. And we try to combine the improvement and with the fun, the evening activities and the socialization, the friends and all that. So I just love the camp business and haven't felt the need to do anything else for my entire business career. But I sort of lucked into it, being exposed to this opportunity. Probably wouldn't have discovered this business otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I think, the way you're from choosing tennis over, the yacht club, and then, you're career choice. I think we're all very lucky that you did that, and you know, I'm sure you're happy with the decisions too. And so, you know, like you mentioned, it's just fantastic, you know, coaches that you've been able to get. Like Brian Boland was actually a guest on episode 34 of the Tennis Files podcast.
Oh, was he?
He was, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Brian, what a guy, and what a job he's done. Yeah,
yeah, incredible, yeah. Incredible stuff. And then I know you have Coach Billy Pate from Princeton. Who's on? He's a great guy as well. I've seen his teams do very well. So how many players have gone through U.S. sports camps? You know, can you give us an estimate of that? You think
a total in all the sports?
Yeah.
Well, 85,000 last year.
Wow! In one year.
In one year.
Holy moly!
I think we threw out. I think it was like 1.2 or 3 million over the period, because it's sort of grown, you know, not dramatically, but, you know, 10% a year, number of kids, and, you know, in 2000, I don't know, way back when. We've been doing it 40 years, but I, you know, somewhere in excess of a million, and hopefully we'll keep it going. The camps tend to be fairly stable just because of what we do in that, you know, we're at the University of Virginia with Brian. Mm-hmm. Now, if Brian decides to retire after he's won his, you know, 10th NCAA championship, the new coach will come in and he'll be a high-level coach, and he'll just plug right into, you know, the Nike camp at UVA. So we get very little turnover, and we keep adding camps because there's terrific coaches out there that want to do camps, that can do camps, that have facilities. We're actually doing more and more day camps rather than resident, although in tennis we have quite a few resident camps. But it's just a nice partnership. It's actually a partnership with the coach, and because the coaches are busy. They don't have time to do marketing, registrations, and talk to the parents, and customer service, and line up insurance and T-shirts and all that, which is what we do for all of them. They hire their staff, they run a camp, and boom, they go do their other coaching jobs. So it's a nice partnership, and it's win-win. I mean, they do well, and it's important for them, for these camps, for their entire financial, you know, structure, because the income from the camps is important to them, for them and their families. So that's how we were able to, you know, work with Brian, and of course we have the relationship with Nike, and Nike is incredibly supportive, and Brian and Billy love to run Nike camps.
Yeah, and they're just incredible coaches as well. It's just great how you have so many wonderful partnerships there. I know you have to run, Charlie, so a couple quick questions for you. What do you think sets apart U.S. sports camps and Nike tennis camps from other tennis camps out there?
A good tennis camp is almost entirely dependent upon the director who hires the staff and trains the staff and invests time and energy and passion into the camp and the teaching and the coaching and the relating to the kids. And we let the coaches be the coaches. We don't have a set curriculum. We don't tell them how to teach. We have sort of guidelines on staff ratios and the amount of hours in a program, et cetera. But the coaches really, the directors feel an ownership. Well, they are. They're the owners of the camp. We're partners, but it's really their product, and they care a lot about it. So we can take coaches of very different philosophies, maybe in terms of teaching or various aspects of how to help young players improve, you know, technique and training and things like that. But what they do is by this commitment, by committing to helping them get better in their games, have fun and, you know, in a positive environment. I think that's how we can work with so many coaches and have the, you know, like the quality and the quality control that you need. It's part of the partnership model. And we're just able to have over the years gotten into these partnerships with outstanding coaches. You know, whether it's, I mean, Dick Gould way back when at Stanford, and there's D3 coaches, and there's, you know, some high school coaches, teaching professionals at the club level. They all have the same motivations. Awesome. Help these kids get better. At the end of the week, say, yeah, this was a great experience. I made friends. I got better. So, and they do well. So that's how we're able to have these networks in our sports, and it's true of all the sports.
Fantastic, Charlie. Yeah, I mean, you know, I talked to Brian Boland for, you know, 2 hours, and really everybody, you know, understood, you know, who listened to that, just the level of dedication and how great of a guy he is. So if you have instructors like that, then, I mean, you're going to have successful camps for sure. So, Charlie, where can we find you and U.S. sports camps and Nike tennis camps online or in person?
Real easy. I mean, go online, type in Nike tennis camps and or tennis camps in, you can say, if you live in Baltimore, type in tennis camps. And just because of our size and how we run our website, I mean, we're right there in organic search. Number one, always number one in organic search. We also have some sponsored links, and then you click on and you have a choice of, it'll come up U.S. Sports Nike camps, and you can click right on the tennis, and boom, here comes the geographical breakdown. So Maryland and Massachusetts all the way through, and you click and you see the schedules, dates, prices, everything. And you can take your time, make some choices, and pretty easy to sign up too. It's very efficient. But we're the largest. That doesn't necessarily mean we're the best, but I think we're as good as anybody out there, almost all the camps. So that's where you find us.
Great stuff. Yeah, and confirmed. You know, I Googled tennis camps, and boom, U.S. sports camps number one. Yep.
All right.
yeah, confirmed, of course.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah, that's great stuff, Charlie. So just one last question that I asked all my guests to end the show. What's one piece of advice you can give our audience to help them improve their tennis games?
You have to have a vision. You have to have a vision of, one, what you can be, and two, you have to commit to that vision however you can. It's not easy. I mean, it is a day-to-day thing. You got to think about it, and you got to structure your day-to-day so that you can do your practice and your training, even if it's a minimal amount. But you have to stay true to this vision. And it helps if you have a vision that's, you know, a greater vision than maybe what you are now, what you think you might be limited to. I don't know anybody who needs to accept a limited horizon, a limited vision of what you can be. Because it's real easy to give up on that. It's real easy to let other things get in the way. We all have them. We have business and family and kids and, you know, maybe it's finances or something. But, you know, it's worth it. It's worth it. We're all blessed to be able to do this sport. And we will enjoy it more the better we are at it. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic advice. That everything starts with a vision and commitment to the vision. As long as you have that, then you know all the motivations are there for you to keep pursuing your goals and improving. That's fantastic. Charlie, I just want to thank you so much for being a guest on the Tennis Files
podcast. What a pleasure.
Podcast.
This is great. I love what you're doing, and you know, we love this game, and
yeah,
shows like this, thank you, are just great. So, hi to everybody out there who's listening, and God bless you all for being participants, and you can get better.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful words.
Okay.
Thank you, Charlie. Thanks for the kind words, and I'm sure everybody appreciates it. Thanks so much, Charlie.
Yeah, thanks.
Take care. All right. I hope you all enjoyed my interview with Charlie Hoveler from U.S. Sports Camps and Nike Tennis Camps. I had a lot of fun speaking with him on the podcast for this episode. And again, I really want to encourage you all to check out the Tennis Technique Summit. I've put a lot of hard work into it and got, some incredible coaches on there, top of the line, from people who have won Grand Slams to people who coach at academies and some of the top online tennis instructors as well. So great mix, I feel. Also college coach as well. It's a great event. And if you just go to TennisTechniqueSummit.com or TennisFiles.com/summit, you can get your free ticket and upgrade if you want. It's all up to you, of course. But you can watch all the videos for nada. Which is a pretty good deal, in my opinion, of course. So, yeah, really appreciate, you guys always supporting me and for all the kind emails and messages that I've been getting. And also for those of you who have been giving me suggestions on who to put on the Tennis Technique Summit, really appreciate it. Obviously I have limited bandwidth, so I'm not able to accommodate, all the requests, but I really do appreciate it and keep it logged in my notes for next time as well. So with that being said, I wish you all the best, and I can't wait to see you all on the next episode of the Tennis Files podcast and at the Tennis Technique Summit if you're interested. So take care, guys, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit TennisFiles.com.